Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Both for our radio audience, those joining us in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, as well as those joining us online in Atlanta on 106liveradio.com, as well as those tuning in around the world through our friends at blogtalkradio.com. We're glad you could be with us as well. You know, one of the things that I've talked about, I've noticed recently on this program, is the idea of human rights and how we should all be treated and treating people the way that we want to be treated, and as well as realizing how our actions are able to have an impact on others. A book that I had a chance to read recently, I think, really helps us to look at this when it comes to our criminal justice system that we have, as well as the way that we mete out punishment in this country. Our next guest is Peter K. Enns. He's the author of the book Incarceration Nation, How the United States Became the Most Punitive Democracy in the World. It is a startling cover, and I have to say it's a startling book, to really look at not only, of course, the way that crime is being able to be not only looked at in this country, but also the way that we have to look at the individuals that are involved and the repercussions that can come from the way that we deal with the criminal justice system as well. If you're just now hearing about Peter's book, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But Peter, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Hey, Cyrus. Happy to be here.
Hey, glad to have you on with us. Peter, you know, I read this book with a lot of interest. For one, of course, because I knew I'd be speaking with you, but also because this is not always an easy thing to talk about. And I think, you know, whether it's our radio audience in Mississippi, and we hear the numbers all the time about, you know, the amount of individuals who are incarcerated and the, you know, of course, the sentences that are given out. But then you have the other side of that. And I think that's where a lot of people are torn, Peter, because they think about, okay, if you're committing a crime, then you have to, you know, be willing to suffer whatever the penalty might be. What has it been like for you, though, as you've been discussing this book, to help us not only realize why it's important for us to examine, of course, the sentences that are given out, but also the way that we look at crime in this country?
Yeah, sure. That's a really important question. And there is the crime component, as you mentioned. So when we're thinking of the length of sentencing or what the punishment is, one important consideration is, are these penalties having a crime-deterrent effect? And so that's one aspect of this. And interestingly, almost all the research points to that dollar for dollar, what we're spending on mass incarceration in the U.S. is not the most effective strategy for crime deterrence. But there's also, beyond the crime-deterrent aspect, is what are the other costs, right? Not just fiscal, but cost to individuals, cost to their families, cost to the communities, cost to society as a whole. So there's a huge array of issues that need to come into the conversation.
Yeah, I think that is so important. And I think you even go back to the 1960s. And I want to say, for those who have not had a chance to read the book, there's a lot of research in this book. And, Peter, we'll talk a little bit later about how long it took you to actually write Incarceration Nation. But, I mean, when you were able to go back, did you feel in your mind, because I kind of thought about it myself when I was reading it, that old adage, the more things change, the more they stay the same. When you look at the way things were in the 1960s and the look at crime and what was said about crime on the increase and how people viewed crime and the punishment of it, as well as where we are today in 2016.
Yeah, on one hand, that's exactly right. And I'll tell you where I think that's most sort of that more things change, the more they stay the same, is how the reaction to crime, and especially media coverage of crime, has been consistent for a long time. And what I mean by that is overemphasizing violent crimes, overemphasizing crimes committed by racial minorities. And this, what that means is the more media covers crime, what I find is the more the public becomes more punitive. But where I think it doesn't quite hold is oftentimes we think of the U.S., the United States has a reputation for being a very punitive society. That reputation is deserved, but the level of punitiveness has varied substantially. And one of the stunning things I found was in the 50s, the U.S. incarceration rate was on par with Scandinavian countries, in between Finland and Denmark. And I think a lot of people fail to realize that it took decades of an expanding criminal justice system moving steadily in a more punitive direction for the United States to become the highest incarceration, the largest imprisoner in the world.
Yeah, I think that is the thing. And I think, too, the other interesting thing for me, because a lot of this history I didn't know, Peter, until I was reading Incarceration Nation, is the attitude. And I think this is another interesting thing because, when I was prepping for this, I thought that there are some people, especially in the climate that we're in today, when you think about the political climate, they make as part of their platform about being tough on crime, and that is just a part of how they want to be seen. They definitely want to be seen as being soft on crime, but also how that does play into emotion, as you kind of address in the book, as well as fear. Was one of the interesting things for you, Peter, with this book, is to realize how much fear drives the conversation when it comes to the punishing of crime as well as the sentencing of criminals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what really drove this home was, as I did the research and I saw the relationship between the crime rate in the U.S. and how that changes and how the punitiveness of the public changes. And for the 60s, 70s, 80s, early 90s, the crime rate steadily going up and the public's following that. Not following the crime rate exactly, but what I find is media is covering the crime rate, and media is the factor here that's leading the public in this punitive direction. But another important component that's also, I don't think, fully appreciated in this day and age, as the crime rate's gone down since the mid to late 90s, the public has become less punitive. We're still a very punitive society, but these increases and decreases are really important for understanding the criminal justice system.
Right, and I think that is one of the important parts of this conversation for sure. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio dial or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. Peter K. Enns is our guest for this segment. And remember the name, Peter K. Enns. That's going to be important later when we tell you guys how to get the book for yourself. But the book is entitled Incarceration Nation, How the United States Became the Most Punitive Democracy in the World. As I said, Peter, it is a startling cover, as well as, of course, the numbers you give. The numbers can be, I think, disappointing. I think it has to be, for a lot of people, surprising when they look at the relation of how I think some of the sentences are being handled, what people are being locked up for in relation to how it actually affects crime. It has one of the interesting things for you also been in this, and was it part of your hope, that you also help us to understand how the importance of looking at this as really what it's become, and that is that really the criminal justice system has become a big business.
Yeah, absolutely. The scope of the criminal justice system is really hard to even to comprehend, just the amount of money that goes into this. Now, in terms of the business aspect, the privatization of prisons is, of course, a component of this. The overwhelming majority of prisons are still run by state or federal government, but that's important to recognize, because as criminal justice budgets have expanded, and really this has affected the states most. Close to 90% of those in prison in the U.S. are in state facilities, and what that's meant is, as states have spent more and more on their prison systems, they've had to cut other areas. And one of the areas that's been cut in every state as the prison rate has grown is higher education. And that's a really the public really needs to be aware of that trade-off, that raising the incarceration rate does have effects on really anybody who knows someone in going to a state university, whether it's themselves, a friend, their children or friend's child, there's an impact here.
Yeah, I think that is so true. And I think, again, remembering that that the two things don't necessarily work together, that being the crime rate and the incarceration rate. One of the things that you wrote, I wanted to actually read this, for those who have the print edition of the book, it's found on page 103. It's under the chapter, The Importance of Analyzing Changes in the Incarceration Rate. You shared this in the book, Peter. A central puzzle in criminal justice research is a seemingly weak relationship between the crime rate and the incarceration rate. And economist Glenn Laurie writes, for two generations, crime rates have fluctuated with no apparent relationship to a steady climb in the extent of imprisonment. You know, when you have shared things like that, because again, a lot of us who don't follow this probably the way that you have don't even realize that. We don't even think about that the two don't necessarily go together. How have you found that to be at least changing the way that people think about then not only, of course, I think the imprisonment and how prison terms are being meted out, but also, of course, the conversation that's taking place around crime?
Yeah, I think there's really two sides to that coin, and what I mean by that is the number imprisoned that's referring to is exactly right. More and more people have been imprisoned, and that doesn't reflect the crime rate. And the reason is the sentences are – well, there's several reasons. One of the reasons is the sentences are so long, so it takes a long time for many people who have been sentenced to be released. Another reason is what constitutes a crime that carries a prison sentence, that's been changed by policy. One, but the other side of the coin is what one thing I did find is if we look at whether how much the incarceration rate is changing, so not looking at the levels, the exact rate or number incarcerated, but how much it's changing, that does somewhat reflect the crime rate. And so the reason that distinction is so important is the scope of mass incarceration in this country is not well beyond what we should expect from the crime rate. But if we want to understand what makes the year-to-year incarceration rate go up or down, we can't ignore the crime rate because that is connected to the whole process. And I think a lot of scholars studying this haven't focused enough on the year-to-year changes. And if we want to think about moving forward and maybe how to get the United States to relinquish its title as being the world's incarceration leader, we need to think about on a year-to-year basis what's affecting these changes.
Right. I think that is so true. I mentioned earlier about the amount of time because, as I said, there's a lot of research that you've put into this book. That's very obvious. And then, of course, we have the different charts there to kind of outline a lot of what you're talking about in the book. Tell us about the amount of time. Once you decided that this was a topic, Peter, that you wanted to address, how much time did it take you to actually write this book?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that, Cyrus, because it took a long time and much more than I anticipated. This was over 7 years of work going into this, and I didn't start out deciding that I was going to write a book on the incarceration rate. I knew the U.S. had the world's highest incarceration rate. I knew that hadn't always been the case, and I was puzzled by this, and I just started looking into it. And the more started as one paper, and that turned into one journal article. But the more I looked into this, the more I realized conventional wisdom for why the U.S. Imprisonment rate increased so much did not have the whole story, and I just kept finding new information. More data led to new information, and the project kept getting bigger and bigger. And you know, a little over 7 years later, the book is the result.
Right. Did you find that one of the things that we do not think about, and then we do hear about it sometimes in some of the news stories and even in some movies we see this dramatized, and that is the collateral damage that happens from not only, of course, some of the sentencing that takes place, but also the, you know, the lives of the family members of those who are incarcerated. Do you think that this book also helps to shed light on remembering, as you say in the book, that these are people? They're not just numbers that we're talking about. These are actual people. In the chapter, Public Opinion as a Unifying Framework, you actually wrote something that I think is interesting. On page 161, you said, those who work in the criminal justice system must also be considered. You go on to say, when we focus on the criminal justice system and mass incarceration, we must pause and remember that there are individual names, faces, and stories behind the aggregate statistics. These individuals include inmates, prosecutors, judges, and correctional officers, as well as their children, parents, and kids, and friends. We must also remember that by influencing the criminal justice system, public punitiveness has affected each of these individuals. Is that something that you want us to remember as we're thinking about this idea of not only, of course, being able to punish criminals, but also remembering that there are individuals?
That's absolutely right. That was really important. And you mentioned all the research that went into this, and I wanted this to be a book based on research, based on evidence. The data were really important to me. Getting history right was really important. At the same time, sometimes when we focus on large numbers and data, it's easy to forget that though it's individuals who are behind those numbers. And so it was really important to me to try to, you know, there's so many stories, literally millions upon millions, no way to tell them all, but to bring certain individual stories into this book and to try to, throughout the book, remind the reader that even though I believe we've got to look at data to understand how we got here, we've got to remember there's individuals underlying it. And the other thing you're reading that quote draws attention to, we often think about, of course, there's implications for those incarcerated, but it's so much more. It's the families, it's the communities, but I also wanted to make sure we remembered those who work in the criminal justice and these correctional facilities. Corrections officers, that's one of the most dangerous careers there is, and there's both evidence of health concerns, also the psychological tools. It's a stressful environment to be incarcerated. It's also a stressful environment to work in a prison. And this relates directly to the rise of mass imprisonment in the U.S. because what it means is as the prisons have become more crowded, that has an effect on both those who are in prison and the workers there. And I feel like we often don't talk about those individuals together, but they both face consequences of the U.S. incarceration rate.
Right. I think that is so true. So with that in mind, Peter, what was the hope? I mean, after devoting 7 years of your life to the research and to being able to look at the various angles of not only incarceration in the United States, but, you know, to do so over a period of time, you know, for over decades, to be able to go back and to look at this. What was your hope that readers of this book would be able to not only take away from it when they finish, but then be able to hopefully share as they're talking with others about it?
Yeah, the first hope was as I started – so one aspect of conventional wisdom is there's been – prominent politicians, so often we hear of Barry Goldwater or Richard Nixon or Ronald Reagan. More recently, we've seen attention drawn even to President Clinton and attention to President Lyndon Johnson. Of course, all of these individuals were involved, but they've been viewed as the leaders acting on their own initiative. And what I found is they were responding to shifting public attitudes. And so to get the history right and to understand this process, that was the first goal, that I felt this was a story that has not been told that's really important to get out there. But then there's a secondary factor of what I hope readers take away, and that is if we view that politicians were acting on their own to make the U.S. the world's leading imprisoner, it seems like a pretty difficult situation to change. But if we recognize that the public was a driving factor, on the one hand, that's a little concerning because a democratic process seems to have contributed to this outcome, but it also opens up an avenue for change, that anyone who thinks that the U.S. should really revise its criminal justice policies and strategy, it's not out of the public's hands. In fact, if the public was a driving force getting us here, the public can be the agent for change. And we see some evidence of that with declining punitiveness and politicians of both parties actually calling for criminal justice reform. And I think, again, it's a bit of a disconcerting story that the public, to a large extent, got us here. But it can be an empowering story that, hey, if things need to change, and many, many of us think they do, the public has some control over this, and maybe a lot of control. And I hope people take agency from that fact.
Right. I think that is really it. And again, to recognize their own personal power. And I think that says a whole lot in this book as well. Again, everyone, Peter K. Enns has been our guest for this segment. Great conversation with you, Peter. The book is Incarceration Nation, How the United States Became the Most Punitive Democracy in the World. It's a fascinating look. And I think regardless of where you fall on this, and as I said at the beginning of the conversation, Peter, this is not easy to discuss because, you know, I think, you know, I knew I grew up here in Mississippi, you know, hearing people say, hey, you do the crime, you know, you have to do the time. I don't think a lot of times people think about what that means. But also, you know, even the conversations about, okay, but does the punishment fit the crime? I mean, we hear that sometimes in movies, but I think this book really helps us understand, again, the human aspect of this conversation and why it is so important, especially if the correlation that I mentioned earlier from the book that people have been able to notice is that the correlation between, of course, incarceration does not necessarily mean that there is less crime. And I think this is a conversation all of us can benefit from. If you all have not noticed it already on social media, I've already tagged Peter there. He's on Facebook. He also is on Twitter, so you guys can easily find him on my page. If you head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb, you'll see a picture of myself holding Peter's book, as well as, of course, I've tagged him there with his Twitter handle as well as his Facebook fan page. And, Peter, you have a website as well. Why don't you give him out that website?
Sure. It's peterenns.org, PETERENNS.org. And, yeah, they can follow me on Twitter there. They could find my email if anybody wants to follow up with a question. Happy to touch base.
All right. And make sure that on Amazon, when you all head over there to get the book for yourself, make sure you type in Peter K. Enns. I was telling Peter before we went on, didn't realize his name was so popular. There are other authors out there named Peter Enns, but make sure you all type in Peter K. Enns, and that's E-N-N-S, as you heard Peter say, to make sure you all are able to get his particular book. Again, it's called Incarceration Nation. You can't miss the cover. Again, it's a really powerful cover. So make sure you guys do that, as well as, of course, as Peter suggested, make sure you let him know if you have any other questions or any comments for him as well about the conversation. Peter, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it and looking forward to having you back.
Great. Cyrus, thank you. Really enjoyed the talk.
Hey, same here. And we thank your audience for joining us for another great segment of Conversations Live. If you're joining us on the radio side of our program, stay where you are. There's more Conversations Live to come for you. For those joining us online, though, we are going to lose you. So if you came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Peter, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay. As I mentioned, I've already tagged Peter on social media, so you can find the link there. Again, head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. The link to this interview is right there. Click on that link. You can listen to the show completely for free and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.